From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
She's a member of the Howard University faculty who is committed to social justice and is passionate about doing all she can to strengthen our historically Black colleges and universities. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is Dr. Kenesha Grant. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Grant, tell me a little bit about your early childhood. You grew up in South Florida?
I am from South Florida. I grew up in a single-parent home, not in the good neighborhood, kind of in the rough area of town. But I don't think I really was aware of any of that until I got to college and met other people who were not from those circumstances. I had a really loving and determined mother who worked hard and pushed me to work hard and told me that, you know, the world was my oyster and I could do whatever I wanted to do. So I think that's what I recall about early childhood.
Tell me a little bit about your schooling in that circumstance in terms of what types of teachers you interacted with in that public school system. As we look at our education system today, you know, more and more teachers who look like the students in the classroom seem to be playing a significant role in their development.
So my earliest educational experiences were actually challenging. I started school early. My mother, for some reason, decided that I had to be 5 years old in fifth grade and to be 6 years old in, 5 years old in first grade and to be six in first grade would be a total failure. So I showed up at school wholly unprepared. I couldn't read. I didn't know how to do basic things. If I remember correctly, I didn't have a Black teacher until I got to middle school. But I do remember the teachers in elementary school being very patient and caring and attentive in making sure that I got from wherever I was when I showed up at elementary school to where I needed to be to get onto the next grade.
And what was middle school and high school like in terms of making that transition once you were caught up?
I think I caught up in the fourth grade, if I remember correctly. And I don't know, something about reading became fun. Became interesting, and it became something I understood in a way I hadn't understood it earlier. When I got to middle school, I was a decent student, but not like an amazing student. And the same was true in high school. I thought that I wanted to be a pediatrician. So I went to a magnet school in Pompano, Florida, Ely High School, and everybody at that school is either working to be an engineer or a doctor. And I, though I thought I wanted to be a doctor, was always very interested in world events and always thinking about what the world should be and how the world was probably not what they were telling us it was on the news. And I took a government course in my senior year, which was 2000, and the 2000 elections were happening. And it was at that time where I was also choosing a major that I thought, I don't know what this is, where I could think about the Electoral College all day, but I want to do that. And it was probably not until the 12th grade, until college, that I really got serious about being an excellent student. All before, I was just kind of coasting, I think, as many students do, not really thinking deeply about how important it would be in the future.
Yeah, but clearly once you had that switch turned on, you went into overdrive because you then chose to go to Florida A&M University.
I think Florida A&M might have chosen me more than I chose it. I thought I would go to North Carolina A&T on an ROTC scholarship. I was active in ROTC in high school, and something happened with my paperwork there, and they didn't call me back. And FAMU did and said, not only should you come, we have money for you. You should be here in August. Come. So I went. Like many people in the state of Florida do, you show up at FAMU and hope it works out well. And I got there and it did. And I met lots of very caring, very dedicated professors who were not just dedicated to like the idea of the work in the textbook, but dedicated to making political science, in my instance, work in real life. So we had a county commissioner, for example, who was one of my professors, who made sure that we were always at county commission meetings. And Jeb Bush was the governor of Florida at the time. He was not popular. And many people in the student government, as well as some of the people on the faculty, were instrumental in making sure that we voiced our opinions about his policies.
Jeb Bush, who obviously has occupied a significant space in our national politics recently, had a policy in Florida that was instituted that obviously has affected the number of black students in particular entering the state institutions of higher education in Florida. If you can expand on what that policy really did or what effect it had on the higher education institutions like yours in Florida A&M.
Yeah, that was the One Florida policy, which was highly unpopular at the time. So the goal was not just to end affirmative action in schools, but also to end it in government contracting. And as you can imagine, people of color throughout the state of Florida were not excited about that. In addition to the One Florida plan that ended affirmative action and kind of changed the way that schools like FAMU would get funding, he, along with, I guess, the Department of Education at that time, instituted an exam called the FCAT exam. I think it's like the Florida Comprehensive Assessment Exam. And by the time I finished at FAMU, the numbers of black students who were going to college had dropped tremendously. And I think that it was a result, kind of a direct result of the policies of One Florida and the introduction of this exam. So interestingly, he came to the FAMU student government to ask us, what do you think? Like, why aren't black students enrolling in college in large numbers? And we told him, we think the problem is these policies you have, and what are you going to do about it? And interestingly, he, along with, well, he created a commission, and the commission ended up proposing a scholarship for first-generation students, which made it through the legislature and still exists today.
I've been looking at this closely because the University of Florida's admission of black students in particular in their incoming classes has really dropped by about 50%, I believe, between 2007 and 2013. One reason why that I'm very curious about this is that the number of students, African-American students who go to medical school, University of Florida sends the third largest number behind Xavier and Howard.
Right.
And obviously, if the numbers start decreasing there,
the pipeline decreases as well, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's interesting to see how policies, just in one state, we often think, you know, all politics are local in terms of elections.
Right.
But we rarely think of the repercussions nationally in a state like Florida, where one change in a policy could lead to probably a national change in the number of African Americans, for instance, who go to medical school.
I think that's right. Another thing that I would add to that is that I think we could be more thoughtful sometime about the long-term impacts of these things. So I think at the time when we were upset about One Florida in Florida, we were thinking about ourselves, right? I'm thinking about myself. I'm thinking about my family. I'm not thinking about the kid from New Orleans or the kid from New York who might have gone to University of Florida and might have gone to be a doctor, but is not going to go anymore. So it's important to be thinking about not just our local politics, but the nation, as you say.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is Dr. Kenesha Grant. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Let me switch gears a little bit. Obviously, you were well-trained at Florida A&M. Great experience. It's an excellent institution. My mentor also attended Florida A&M. At that time, it was called Florida A&M College, Dr. LaSalle LaFall, and he had an excellent education. You left there and pursued a PhD at Syracuse University. Tell me why and what was that like?
So at FAMU, I studied political science and then went and got a master's in public administration. And one of the professors there on the first day of the first class in public administration told us all that Syracuse had the number one public administration program. And if we were going to be anybody in the world, we should try to go to that school. So after I got the master's degree, and it occurred to me, because FAMU let me be a visiting professor as soon as I finished my master's, that I would need to get a PhD, Syracuse was at the top of the list. Because they would let me study American politics and they would study public administration. But not only that, they were the best at public administration.
Okay. And what about it made it, you know, the best?
Well, Syracuse invented graduate study in public administration. So if you go back and you read the earliest scholars in public administration, they are all writing from the campus of Syracuse University. So that's what I think makes it the best. And many of the best and brightest minds in public administration and in government go to Syracuse at some point, even if for a brief time, to do study there.
Now, you've joined our Department of Political Science, steeped in history here on our campus. Tell me what you're researching presently and what do you teach?
my work is all about how the movement of black people in America changes politics. So my dissertation was about how the Great Migration influenced the Democratic Party. My current work is a narrower focus on that, and it's about how the Great Migration influenced party politics in Chicago from 1911 to 1971. So my basic argument is that we have a great number of people who are leaving the South. In the case of Chicago, they're leaving Mississippi, Arkansas, and other places kind of in the middle South and going straight up to Chicago. And they're getting involved in politics almost immediately. And they're able to vote where they weren't able to vote before. In Mississippi, you can't vote, and in Chicago, you can. So they get there. They're almost immediately involved in politics. Politicians realize that they're there and start seeking their votes as their population grows. So I'm writing about, or I think it's interesting to see how politicians changed and moved kind of further to the left on racial issues. Sometimes it was a real move. Sometimes it was a fake move for the votes. But they did change their behaviors in order to deal with the black population.
Chicago politics obviously has a very storied history and obviously led to the production of the first African-American president. So
right.
I'm curious if you think that that migration and some of the evolution of that movement to the left on racial issues, which probably then led to more elected elected officials of color, had anything to do with the rise of Barack Obama?
I think so. I think some people might disagree, but I think Chicago is kind of the center of black American politics. We get the first black congressman from there. We get many of the people who come up in the Great Migration elected to office at various levels in the state legislature, in the city. We get a black mayor very early. We get lots of black political participation and power sooner in Chicago than we do in New York or Philadelphia or Detroit. And it's mostly because the people who migrate to Chicago are all in what we call the Black Belt, a small segregated community, and they don't move out until later in the 20th century, but they are all there, and because they are all there packed together, they're able to get elected to office. And I think it is absolutely the case that their early election to office leads to the first black president of the United States coming from Chicago.
Now, that migration obviously was, as described, a migration from states in the South to the Midwest city of Chicago. Today, I guess you can argue you have a social media migration of our black youth and the way they devour their politics, consume it. I'm not sure how well they devour it. Some of them may be getting indigestion from it. But what do you think that social media migration is doing for the politics, probably akin to that Southern movement to Chicago, let's say?
I think that young people's participation in or attention to social media probably makes them thoughtful, though not necessarily active all the time, about politics in a way they might not otherwise be. So if social media doesn't exist, I would have to be a person who's like naturally interested in politics or be around a person who's naturally interested in politics. But on Twitter, I have the ability to follow 1,000 people, and maybe, you know, 2 or 3 or 10 of those people are interested in politics. So I kind of get some of this news in passing, which I think is really important and really potentially helpful to get young people active, to get them organized, as we know that they can often do, and to get them active in politics.
And I think you make a good point. You know, it's still a passive consumption,
right?
But hopefully it will lead to an active movement in terms of their going to the polls, or for that matter, really investigating issues that might be on the ballot.
Right. I think as an instructor of political science, it's my responsibility to make that transition for them. So hopefully they are following people who are giving them information about politics. But when they come to my class, I'm telling them, hey, this, you are the one who has to make the change. You are the one who has to call the mayor, the senator, the congressman. You are the person who has to do the organizing. This is not, you know, pie in the sky things happen. You have to make them happen. So hopefully they are getting that message from me, and hopefully they're taking that message home so that the people in their communities also realize that this is just, it's not enough to tweet about it. You have to do things too.
Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Dr. Kenesha Grant. I think we can safely feel comfortable that the journey that she's taken from South Florida here to Washington, D.C. will certainly leave an indelible mark on our national politics through Howard University. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.